chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off the program with a clip of Alex and Robert Barnes. And they're discussing for about 9 or 10 minutes, 2,000 Meals by DeSosa. This is a documentary that's just premiered recently in the last few days, and it's about how they use the drop boxes in the election to cheat the election and create the biggest, most fraudulent election in United States history. So here we go with Alex interviewing Robert Barnes, and boy, he lays it on the line. Here we go.
2,000 Mules, so they can find it at Dinesh D'Souza's Locals page. So they can join his Locals page, get a year's subscription, and get the film for free. And the core of the film is about from the 25-minute mark to about the 45-minute mark.
And it's a slam dunk. It's a slam dunk proving how they did it.
Exactly. And some of it was stuff I was complaining about to RNC chairwoman of the Romney family back at the time. And as we said, we need real investigative resources, real legal resources to battle this. And one way to expose it was to show not only the disparate turnout at places like nursing homes and mail drops and places like that, but one of the mechanisms would be the mules that were videotaped doing this because they were required to have video surveillance on all the drop boxes. But instead, they refused to expend any. They raised hundreds of millions of dollars in the names of investigating this, and then they pocketed it and grifted it, went to other things.
Right now, with Robert Barnes, good friend of mine, great constitutional lawyer, but one of the smartest historians and political operatives I know, we're going to cover everything. We're going to cover Roe v. Wade and the firebombings and the intimidation squads and where that's going in the midterms, 184 days out, and what are the globalists going to do to try to defeat this giant political realignment that's already taking place. We have the massive situation unfolding in Russia and the new developments there we're going to be getting into. We've got George Soros openly running the new disinformation board that is right out of 1984. We have the inflation. We have the situation in China. We have the old the COVID news that's breaking where J&J's had to pull their shot, admitting it causes blood clots and heart attacks. This is an incredible time in history, Robert Barnes, and I haven't talked to you since earlier today in text saying, could you come on? And I just said, just please come on, because you can obviously talk about all these issues. You're just like I am and our listeners are. You've got your head in the game. What do you want to hit on first? What is most important?
I think it's a great premiere, the film 2,000 Mules. I think that details what we talked about all the way back in Atlanta, Georgia, in November of 2020, and laid out how they committed the election fraud, how they stole the 2020 election. It was America's color revolution and what took place. And there are a lot of things that led up to it, the BLM riots, the Antifa activity, the pandemic, the lockdowns, all of those things that were key to laying the stage for what took place in November. But what took place in November was a three-level unconstitutional election. The people who voted were not constitutionally qualified to vote, many of them. People that the method by which they voted was not a constitutionally qualified method of voting. And then the count and the canvassing of the ballots was not done in a constitutionally qualified manner, because to be constitutionally qualified in a presidential election required that the state legislature set the rules, and the state legislature's rules were ignored and eviscerated. And what 2,000 Mules does well is document one part of it. And the one part of it was, how did they flood the system with illegal ballots? One, they sent out a bunch of ballots unchecked. Right here in Las Vegas last week, I received two ballots. One ballot for me.
Barnes, let me interrupt you, which I'm famous for. Let me interrupt you and start over, because I didn't know you bring up this new film. For those that don't know, tell us where it is, who made it, what it covers, and the fact that Fox is saying they're not going to air it now, even though it's totally documented. And as you said, the electronic scam was the deep state red herring, which you were proven right about when you were all over the country for Trump, proving it was mules voting multiple times, getting harvesting the fake ballots, filling them in and entering them, and that's now been proven. You have been totally vindicated. We're not putting down other people that wanted to go with the electronic thing and all that BS. They're not bad people. Let's just admit they got conned and move on to how they really did it, because they're planning to do it again in 184 days with a new COVID hysteria we'll get to next segment. But just break down what this film is and why they're censoring it.
So Dinesh D'Souza put together a film, and he relied heavily on the theories that we've been talking about, which was to focus and highlight the methods and mechanisms by which they got all these illegal ballots into the system, either because the person was not constitutionally qualified to vote. In other words, they lived in multiple states. They were dead. They were incompetent, like the nursing home votes in Wisconsin. They were too young to vote. They were not legally here. They were not legally citizens. But how did they get those votes in? They got them in through the mail-in system. But how did that happen? Well, they were able to circumvent the U.S. Postal Service and circumvent the regular method of delivering ballots by instituting drop boxes all across the country, which was funded by Mark Zuckerberg in the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars, bribing election officials, as the Wisconsin, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Office of Special Counsel for the state legislature has confirmed in his report.
And they are extremely scared of this. So how do you beat real election fraud evidence? You bring up fake election fraud evidence, get useful idiots to cover it, and none of us are perfect. I covered it some. You were warning at the time, but I covered all aspects of it, all points of the compass. That's how you kill a real story with a fake story. They are so scared of D'Souza's new film. Where do people find it?
2,000 Mules, so they can find it at Dinesh D'Souza's Locals page. So they can join his Locals page, get a year's subscription, and get the film for free. And the core of the film is about from the 25-minute mark to about the 45-minute mark.
And it's a slam dunk. It's a slam dunk proving how they did it.
Exactly. And some of it was stuff I was complaining about to RNC chairwoman of the Romney family back at the time. And as we said, we need real investigative resources, real legal resources to battle this. And one way to expose it was to show not only the disparate turnout at places like nursing homes and mail drops and places like that, but one of the mechanisms would be the mules that were videotaped doing this, because they were required to have video surveillance on all the drop boxes. But instead, they refused to expend any. They raised hundreds of millions of dollars in the names of investigating this, and then they pocketed it and grifted it, went to other things. So this details what would have happened had we actually done the investigation at the time that some of us were requesting that the RNC refused to do.
You and I were in those states, like Georgia, like Arizona, and we were trying to get this done, and it wasn't done.
That's exactly right. In other words, what he's detailed is what we said we would be able to prove, which is when you look at the video surveillance of what took place at these drop boxes, what you see is people dropping off multiple ballots, not delivering one ballot, multiple ballots. Sometimes they're delivering them at 3 in the morning. What they took at 2000 and Mules did is they just bought the data that's available to geo-track your cell phone, and they tracked cell phones that were visiting multiple drop boxes on multiple days and then stopping off at the kind of places where they
got the surveillance footage and show it.
Exactly. And you could see things like people walking up late at night with gloves. They would put the ballots in.
My brother-in-law, who's a really smart guy, he's a chemist, and my dad, both were at post offices days after the election and saw people with hundreds of ballots signing them and putting them in. They saw it themselves. It was going on after the election.
Absolutely. I mean, Pennsylvania, they took 10 days to, quote-unquote, process the ballots. Georgia, more and more ballots kept showing up. You know, day after day after day, more ballots kept showing up. How did that happen? This is how it happened. So they needed mules as their intermediaries, and this just captures one aspect of the fraud, because the fraud was broader and more wholesale. But this is an aspect that here they have smoking gun evidence of mules putting in more ballots. And remember, in most of these states, this form of ballot trafficking is illegal, is a crime. That makes those ballots themselves illegal ballots, regardless of how those ballots came in, regardless of what the original intention of a voter was. Doesn't matter. That ballot was done and cast in an illegal, unconstitutional manner. That makes it a ballot that could not be counted. And there's just tracking these mules in the states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona. They were able to find more illegal ballots than the margin of victory by a large margin, sometimes by a multiple of 10 or more, in every single one of these states, just tracking this one aspect of the fraud. That was why we always said you need to do a signature match check, because if you did a signature match check, you'd be able to prove that a lot of these ballots were illegal, and that's why no state to this day has done a signature match check on these ballots.
And now we hear Fox News is going to be blocking out Dinesh D'Souza, a totally respected filmmaker, totally incredible record as a journalist, super respected. They're going to be blocking this, the press is reporting.
Yes, I mean, in fact, they reported it last night in the after show of the premiere. They reported that, in fact, they had been told, this involves the True the Vote organization that helped participate in this, they had been told that Fox's lawyers were quashing Fox from putting on any demonstration. Even Tucker, who interviewed one of the people concerning this, has apparently been told not to cover this precise story in detail. So we're going to find out what's happening.
Before the film was released, 2,000 Mules, Tucker Carlson interviewed Catherine Engelbrecht, founder of True the Votes out of Houston, and she's the one that came up with this geofencing idea to find out and look at all those ping information, all that data that those pings generated, and who was visiting those drop boxes and who they were. And this blew the lid off of and proves conclusively that it was a sham election, that it was a fraudulent election. So here I'm going to play back this interview. We played it last week, but if you didn't get it then, you can. It's a good interview to listen to, because supposedly the rumor goes that they've prohibited Tucker from talking about 2,000 Mules, and Fox has been told, do not publicize 2,000 Mules. So here we go with Tucker Carlson interviewing Catherine Engelbrecht.
Well, since the moment that the media called the 2020 election for Biden, a lot of people on the right, a lot of conservatives have had questions, real questions, about the integrity of the election process that year. And we haven't said a ton about it. We've done a couple segments on it, but we've really tried to be as responsible as we can. You know, we don't want to make mistakes. On the other hand, we and you and every other American has an absolute right to seek the truth about elections or any other topic and to say what you think about it, period. So we're, turns out, the only news outlet left in America that believes that. It is now effectively a crime to ask questions about what happened during the last presidential election. That's not an overstatement, by the way. And why is that? Why can't you ask those questions? Democrats always ask that question after an election. And on some level, that's okay. It's not an attack on democracy to demand fair elections, to demand proof of fair elections. It's, in fact, a defense of democracy. When you defend the system, you're supporting the system. But the Biden administration doesn't agree with that. They want you to shut up, vehemently want you to shut up. The Department of Homeland Security, which, by the way, of course, is a law enforcement agency, the biggest in the country, believes that asking questions about the last election is a crime.
Breaking news at this hour from the Department of Homeland Security, that agency warning police departments across the country that false claims about the 2020 presidential election are fueling calls for violence on social media.
False claims about the last election are fueling violence. Now, violence is always bad. We're always against violence, no matter who commits it, unlike the left. But asking questions about the last election is constitutionally protected. It's a right given to you by God and safeguarded by the U.S. government, period. But they're telling you you're committing a crime and you're violent if you ask questions. Democrats have been saying this since Election Day. And keep in mind, there are questions. The last election was not like previous elections. Democrats used the pandemic to change voting rules in ways that made it much easier to commit fraud. That's just true. We have to do this, they told us. People will die if we don't. And at no point, you may recall, did the media raise any questions about these changes to the process. And then within moments of the 2020 election outcome, without conducting any investigation at all into a brand new system of voting, they concluded that any claim of voter fraud was meritless.
Sources tell CNN that top aides are suggesting that the defeated president, President Trump, hold rallies to drum up bogus conspiracies about election fraud.
The GOP keeps spreading completely unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud.
The attorney general now telling federal prosecutors to look into those unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud.
There is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. No evidence of widespread flaws in the mail-in voting process.
Well, of course, they have no idea if that's true because they did no independent investigation whatsoever. They're just shills for the Democratic Party. You know that by now. We're not going to keep repeating the same line, but it's just so glaringly obvious. They don't know anything. They're just asserting something because their friends in the Democratic Party told them to. So why the obsession with mail-in balloting? We haven't had that in the history of this country at the scale we just had it. Well, people can't go to the polls anymore because why? Why are they so in favor of mail-in balloting? And is that connected to the fact that Joe Biden, who is a husk, who's a mannequin, everyone knows that, somehow got more votes than Barack Obama, who's like a living person? Really? That's a fair question. But you'll notice the Democratic Party was thrilled about mail-in balloting.
The American people chose Joe Biden to be their next president by an enormous margin. The successful conduct of that election, among the most secure in American history, was not an accident.
The 2020 election was the most secure election conducted in modern history.
You're going to see states like Arizona and Georgia learn the wrong lesson from 2020, the most secure election ever.
That's just the most secure election ever. Really, Hairhat? Tell us how. They can't tell us how. They're just lying. And maybe it was the most secure election ever, but we have a right to determine for ourselves if it was the most secure election ever. Period. We have an absolute God-given right. And in fact, we need to, because we have an election coming up and then an election after that 2 years later. And if we're going to have confidence in the outcomes of those elections, and we pray we do, then we need to be absolutely certain we know what happened in 2020. That's a long preamble to our next interview, which is with Katherine Engelbrecht. She has conducted what seems to us like an entirely legitimate kind of cool-headed investigation into the 2020 election. And we're happy to have her join us tonight to tell us some of what she found. Exactly. Katherine Engelbrecht, thanks so much for coming on. So this is a very in-depth topic. I hope we can talk at much greater length at some point in a different venue. But just give us the highlights of what you found.
Sure. Well, I mean, you laid it out. There was so much inconsistency in 2020, and we saw it coming in, checks and balances being removed left and right. You couldn't help but wonder why. And then when you had this infusion of private money that put these drop boxes in place that were largely unregulated, you know, that's just a recipe for fraud. You have inaccurate voter rolls catalyzed by this crush of mail-in ballots being deposited in drop boxes that are not being monitored. So what we thought was, what is a way that we can test the theory? Is there abuse or not? And yes, we invested in a tremendous amount, 10 trillion cell phone pings, geospatial data, that allowed us to monitor the device movements around drop boxes to develop patterns of life to determine whether or not unique devices were going repeatedly to drop boxes. Over time, that became a pattern that included not just drop boxes, but also far-left organizations. And we noticed a pattern consistent with the nexus between both the organizations and the drop boxes. So over time, when we did this now in 5 states and 5 jurisdictions, as I sit here tonight, I can tell you there was rampant abuse of those drop boxes, and the data that we have is immutable and proves it, now buttressed increasingly by video.
So can you be a little more specific for those of us who are too old to understand what a drop box is and what role it might play in an election? Why would you have a drop box? Just go to the polls if you want to vote, but that's a separate topic.
Well,
how exactly might this have worked? If there was fraud, as you think these pings suggest, what does that mean exactly?
Sure. So in the 2020 election, there were drop boxes put in place at a scale that had never before been seen. There were a lot of promises made about surveillance video being attached to all the drop boxes and standards being enforced, but none of that really happened on scale.
Of course.
And so what we decided to do was basically geofence. It's sort of a digital way to put a net around each drop box. And then wanted to find out if individual devices crossed through that net, really what turned out to be an extraordinary number of times. Over the 5 states and the 5 jurisdictions that we studied, in order to make the level of study, the average number of Dropbox visits was 38 Dropbox visits into the, and by the way, also including the visits to the nonprofit organizations. So there's definitely a pattern here, and then increasingly now as we're seeing video come out, we're able to match the Dropbox pings with the video, and you see it for yourself. When you can match those, in the states that had video, you see people stuffing in ballots. And nobody was watching this. Why even have surveillance video if no one's going to check it?
Why would you have a partisan organization, these left-wing nonprofits you describe, have any role whatsoever in the mechanics of voting? That just seems prima facie insane to me.
Well, this is what we've been trying to gain ground on for over a year. Investigate this. Why are these patterns here? And really, all it would take is the beginnings. I mean, this is the same type of data that was used in the January 6th event. They were certainly very good about rushing to de-anonymize those pings and track all of that. Let's see some parity on the side of elections. There was wanton abuse in this cycle, and we've got to get to the bottom of it. Because if we don't fix this in 2020, which was outrageous when you look at the way the numbers add up, outrageous. And if we don't get a handle on this, we are destined to repeat it in 22 and 24.
Can I ask you a really simple question? So why wouldn't Congress just pass a law that says elections are run by the government that we all pay for and we hope, and civil service rules we hope keep it nonpartisan? Why don't we just ban any involvement from any politically oriented nonprofit in the mechanics of voting? Like, left or right, why is that hard? Why should Mark Zuckerberg get to control the mechanics of an election? Like, what is that? That's crazy.
Well, it is. And you're seeing states now push back and say no more private money into elections. They're removing drop boxes. There are some positive steps being made. But all of these, many of these temporary changes that were put in place because of the pandemic, those are now codified. So it's the new normal unless your state is pushing back. And states need to run elections, no question about it. But they need to run those elections constitutionally. And that's the missing link that began to emerge in 2020 is, so what, no matter what the Constitution says, they're going to do what they want to do through lawfare and through consent decrees and through fiat. So if Americans don't wake up and recognize that this is what's happening, that there is an abusive process, we are careening to a really ugly place. I mean, it was 2020. Based upon our data, 2020 is beyond question. That outcome would have been different.
Last question. I haven't heard a single Republican office holder, certainly in the Senate, say we cannot allow left-wing billionaires to control the mechanics of voting. That doesn't seem like a controversial statement to me. That just seems like something that I think would surprise most people that it's even possible to be true. Why hasn't any senator said that? Are they so intimidated by insurrectionist claims that they can't say that out loud?
You know, there needs to be a lot more being said about a lot of things. I don't know. What I do know is that America's instinct was right. And even though a lot of the puzzle pieces weren't in place early on in 2020, coming now into 2021 and into 2022, the picture is becoming clearer. The subversion was, in fact, real. And we've got to take it seriously because it's not going to correct itself.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's always the same playbook. They scream at you so aggressively that you sort of backed, okay. And then you realize they're screaming at you because you're on the right track. It's always the same. Catherine Engelbrecht, I hope we talk to you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe, Alex, that InfoWars has actually banned video. You can go to that. I'll have a link up on my site where you can go in and look at this 2,000 meals tonight if you haven't seen it yet. But Catherine Engelbrecht is in there being interviewed during the documentary, the Sosa's production. So it's an important film to see. But I'm going to play a clip now from the UN, and it's a Russian UN representative to the UN, and he's talking about these biological labs that we had over in the Ukraine. And there's evidence that we started destroying documents as the Russians got closer to some of those labs to keep the secret of what we were doing in those labs away from the Russian hands. But here we go with this clip at the UN.
There's biological projects that look like a secret biological military program. This activity is being carried out in the center of Eastern Europe and on the western borders of Russia. It is a real threat to the biosecurity of our country, the region, and given the cross-border nature of these biothreats, to the whole world. There is no information on this in the reporting stipulated by the Bio and Toxin Weapons Convention from Ukraine or from the United States, as was confirmed by Mr. Markram. Preventing this dangerous activity is possible only through our special military operation. Since the previous meeting, 2 months have passed and we've received much new evidence. All of these materials we have placed on the through the Security Council, and I'd like to draw your attention to the most salient pieces of information here. As comes from the documentation on Project 3007, monitoring of epidemiological and the environmental situation with the proliferation in Ukraine of dangerous waterborne diseases, Ukrainian specialists, under the supervision of American colleagues, have regularly carried out collection of water samples from rivers flowing through Ukraine, including the Dnieper, the Danube, and the Dniester, and also the North Crimean Canal. The aim here is to establish the presence in them of specific dangerous pathogens, including cholera, typhoid, hepatitis A and E, and to evaluate the way in which they spread through the water in order to draw conclusions on the ability of these pathogens to incapacitate. Then the collections of these samples were sent to the United States. We have a logical question. Why? Why is a collection of dangerous pathogens being collected by the United States, which might then spread through the waters of this region? Even a look at a Ukrainian map of the water sources in that country is enough to understand that the results of this scientific experiment might be used to create a biological catastrophe, not only in Russia, but on the whole, through the waters of the Azov and Black Seas and in Eastern Europe, including Belarus, Moldova, and Poland. The documents say that the Kiev regime is trying to receive access to the technical means to deliver dangerous bioagents through the air. Last year, the Ukrainian side asked the Turkish manufacturer of drones, Baykar Makina, whether it was possible to equip the drone Bayraktar with an aerosol equipment that would allow it to spread aerosols, more than 20 liters of them, over a distance of 300 kilometers. While in flight. A copy of this letter was disseminated by us on the 19th of April in the document collection that we had then. This system, given the distance of the flight, would represent a real threat of the broad use of dangerous bioaerosols across the territory of the Russian Federation. There is also evidence of the direct involvement of the political establishment in the United States in financing the military and biological activities in Ukraine through subcontractors from the Pentagon, such as Black & Veatch and Metabiota. The aims, however, were far from scientific. In a letter from the vice president of Metabiota in particular, it says that its aim in Ukraine was to guarantee, and I quote, the cultural and economic independence of Ukraine from Russia, end quote. To put it mildly, this is an unusual objective for a biotech company. With the financing and direct involvement of the U.S. Ministry of Defense through its Defense Threat Reduction Agency, there is a network of biolaboratories that are carrying out various pieces of military biological research. According to preliminary data, this network covers Kiev, Odessa, Lvov, Kharkov, Dnipropetrovsk, Kherson, Ternopil, Uzhgorod, and Vinnytsia. In this list, we can now add Mariupol. There are two biolaboratories in the city where we found evidence of the speedy destruction of documents that confirmed that it was working with the American military establishment. The preliminary analysis of the documentation shows that in Mariupol, it's being used as a regional center for the collection and for a passport system for cholera pathogens. The samples that were collected were sent to the Center of Public Health in Kiev, which has the function to further then send on the biomaterial to the United States. This activity has been going on since 2014, as confirmed by the documents covering the distribution of the samples. There's also a health epidemiological laboratory in Mariupol, where we found a document suggesting that a collection of pathogen were destroyed, and that document's from the 25th of February 2022. According to it there was work with cholera pathogens, also pathogens for deer fly fever, anthrax, in other words, with various potential bioagents. Part of the connection of a veterinary laboratory wasn't destroyed in a hurry. That their specialists found pathogens which aren't really usual for veterinary illnesses, such as typhus, paratyphus, and... Thank you very much, Mr. President.
So the Russians are very suspicious of what happened. That was they established some of those labs, and then when the Ukraine became independent, we come in there and take them over. And the revolution that occurred in the Ukraine in 2014 was promulgated by us and our CIA and other people, you know, that were involved in there. We think Victoria Nuland, her husband is Robert Kagan. He's the founder of Project for a New American Century, and all that. I mean, so we've got, and this is coming up next, is Pete Santilli lays out some of these names that were connected with that 2014 revolution and brings us up to date on some of what's happening today about these color revolutions, about maybe the color revolution was 2014 was a color revolution and the same character applied it to us. Anyway, this is Pete Santilli laying out some of these problems with the Ukrainian situation.
Alex Jones's sources are unbelievable. If he heard the name of my source, which he likely won't, be just because I'm an investigative journalist with integrity and will never reveal my sources, of course. Beehives, maybe one day, if we can count on secure communications, I'll tell him who it was, and he will smile and he'll know the validity of this information that came to me. Norm Eisen, ladies and gentlemen, is a CIA buck. He wrote the playbook. It's called the Democracy Playbook, Preventing and Reversing Democratic Backsliding. Essentially, he wrote the playbook on color revolutions. Okay? Color revolutions. Norm Eisen. It gets worse than this. Okay? I'm telling you right now. It gets so bad when you discover who Norm Eisen is. In this seat as a staffer, allowed to be there by Joey Nadler, okay, and Nancy Pelosi. Allowed to be there as a staffer, scripting the questions and allowing his CIA counterparts testify before the House committee. Totally scripted, as everything has been. The Russia collusion thing, it always falls apart, but it's always scripted. But Norm Eisen wrote the book on color revolutions. He worked for the CIA. There's another person who he admires, and you're going to hear on the other side of this next upcoming break, who his hero is, who his mentor is. I'm going to give you the name. I want you to write it down, commit it to memory, and go look him up. It's a name that I was shocked when I discovered. The name, his name is Gene Sharp. Gene Sharp. If you're an info wingnut like me and you go down the rabbit hole to learn who Gene Sharp is, Norm Eisen is essentially the new Gene Sharp that applied the technological methods, for instance, communicating and gaining chat rooms as to how you communicate with each other per the playbook, but using technology. Gene Sharp, when he was taking down countries, Cambodia, Vietnam, I mean, just the whole list of countries that Gene Sharp has taken down through color revolutionary methods, essentially has disintegrated and pulverized communist dictatorships around the world. That was done by Gene Sharp. And his book that he published made it to the revolutionaries in Iran. They would go by the script. They would topple governments, and it doesn't matter. Ceausescu in Romania. For instance, he had all the guns. He had the bureaucracies, but the bureaucracies fail when the people are non-compliant. So they use peaceful, non-violent, colored-styled, revolutionary tactics to subvert these communist dictatorships. What did Norm Eisen do? He took all of his experience in taking down these regimes around the world over the years, came to the United States and activated, of course, all of his State Department. I believe the State Department is a CIA storefront. All the individuals that you saw testifying, these are CIA people. They were involved in the overthrow of the Ukraine. Norm Eisen himself was involved in the overthrow of the Ukraine. not just writing this playbook, but he was involved in doing this all throughout the world. And, of course, these white hat CIA people think that they're doing good for the sake of America to bring down communism and install freedom and democracy. They think that they're doing the right thing. But a lot of them know that they're employing those tactics here in the United States of America to take down the crown jewel of freedom and, quote unquote, democracy known as the United States of America. Don't you dare go away. We're going to dig in even deeper on the other side. Go get your T-shirts at InfoWarsStore.com. And welcome back, everybody. My name is Pete Santilli. I'm a host of the Pete Santilli Show. I actually came to this show today to deliver this bombshell information. Believe it or not, I got in touch with the team, and I said, I have this information. I listened to Alex's review of 2,000 Mules. The light came on. Everything connected. You know, before we get back to that, we're going to learn about Norm Eisenhower. You guys are going to be somewhat shocked to discover the name Gene Sharp, who he is, and how he was connected to the downfall of many, many dangerous regimes through peaceful, nonviolent, color revolutionary methods. He invented it. But, you know, I do want to tell you, I'm not just saying this because I'm here. I'm so honored to be here, especially after having listened to InfoWars, Alex Jones show for decades. And Alex was so instrumental in helping to awaken me. And, you know, for that matter, he taught us all how to do the research, go check the documents. Don't trust anybody. Trust that which you research yourself. And everything that I was researching, I learned to become an investigative journalist with a set of X-ray vision goggles on. So his T-shirts that are selling today, I'm getting two of them. One, it will be preserved for me symbolically. Alex Jones was right all along. And it's taken me this long to figure it out. And everybody else, he certainly was right. I'm getting two shirts, limited edition. One to wear out in public, of course, and one I'm actually going to have in a frame and put it in our studios here in FEMA Region 5 in Cincinnati, Ohio. Very, very symbolic. All right, now listen, I mentioned Gene Sharp, and then I say, oh, Norm Eisen, you know, is connected to Gene Sharp. How can I make that connection? Let's do that right now. I'm just going to play this clip. It's not going to look as pretty because it's a different type of file format, but you'll be able to hear the audio here. Listen to what Norm Eisen, left-hand side, says about Gene Sharp.
Work of this kind, and we were inspired by other work that's out there, including Gene Sharp's From Dictatorship to Democracy.
From Dictatorship to Democracy. That is the book. It's literally guide that all of these quote-unquote revolutionaries, the people, and you know, we've always been sympathetic to it. I remember back in, I think it was 2008, 2009, we'll talk a little bit about that if we have time, how I was involved at the time. I was one of Twitter's early adopters. I was actually providing proxies and methods of communication to the Iranian revolutionaries just because I had that tech experience and had a lot of contacts when I was one of the top 30 Twitter users back then when they first launched. So I've been very sympathetic to the will of the people to take to the streets, the Egyptians that get to the streets in the millions, essentially, who are inconquerable if they come together in the millions, taking to the streets nonviolently, of course. Communist dictatorships crumble. It doesn't matter how many guns Ceausescu had. All right. There was a candlelight vigil by millions of people who refused and said, you, Ceausescu, you want to use your military and you want to come get this Pastor Laszlo Toks? You got to go through us. They held candlelight vigils. And the military was very sympathetic, and the military collapsed. His bureaucracy collapsed. Bureaucracies in communism, dictatorships cannot survive. Well, this Gene Sharp mastered the fine art of doing as follows, kind of like in a Saul Alinsky style. He's like the international Saul Alinsky. How do you get people energized to get out into the streets and get millions of them out there? That's contained in his book, It is titled From Dictatorship to Democracy. I have it just behind me. From Dictatorship to Democracy. Now, who is Norm Eisen as it relates to Gene Sharp? He's I don't even know if he's still alive. Hopefully he's, you know, well, no, not hopefully. I shouldn't say that. Oh, that guy is such a dangerous man. He certainly is. The tactics by which they get people energized in a Saul Alinsky style. How do you get them energized to get to the streets? You lie to them. You lie to them, and you use the people of these, under these dictatorships, you use them in just as evil of a way as a dictatorship would by using the bureaucracies and the guns to point at the people, but you use mind control and give them incentives and essentially lie to them to cause them to say, you get to the streets and we're going to win, we're going to have peaceful protests. This is done by the CIA. Gene Sharp's methods were adopted by the central intelligence agencies, the military, and their psyops, as we actually discovered this week on Band.video. I saw a video how they're attracting new recruits to join in the new psyop, to operate in the darkness, to energize people in a Saul Alinsky fashion to get to the streets and topple regimes. Well, guess what? They've used all of those masterful tactics of lying to people. They've now used it in a color revolutionary way here in the United States of America. As a matter of fact, black is the new orange, as they say, and that is not my term, and that's not a racist term. What we saw with the Black Lives Matter movement was exactly part of the color revolutionary tactics that were outlined in Norm Eisen's guidebook, essentially, for how to launch a color revolutionary, a color revolution. But let me highlight and feature a couple of very important things about who that Brookings Institute. If you go look up Norm Eisen, you'll find him at the Brookings Institute. Who is the Brookings Institution? With Norm Eisen, the senior fellow over there at the Brookings Institution. Let's just cut right to the chase. Huawei, basically funding the Brookings Institution. Huawei with hundreds of millions of dollars being pumped into the Brookings Institution, founded by who? You guys, I know this is overwhelming, but I'm telling you, this is dot connecting. You've heard it all. You've been tuned in to Alex Jones for how many years now? You've tuned in and you're watching videos at Band.video just like me, and you're hearing these bits and pieces that are coming out. They're all connected. Huawei, China, a Chi-Com takeover, the Brookings Institution, led by who? It was founded by Mr. Robert Kagan. Who is Mr. Robert Kagan? He comes from, if you're like me, back in the day, what is it, PNAC, the political whatever it is for a new American century, those 9/11 perpetrators behind the scenes, the likes of George W. Bush, Robert Kagan, he founded the Brookings Institution. That's the same Brookings Institution. And who is Robert Kagan himself? Robert Kagan is the husband of Victoria Nuland. Who's Victoria Nuland? She was the tip of the spear of the deep state to overthrow the country of the Ukraine. All of these people connected, sending Norm Eisen, the author of How to Launch a Color Revolution and Use Technology to Do So. This is just overwhelming. Now, Victoria Nuland, I have pictures of her sitting next to, I did a documentary film when I was investigating the Ukraine overthrow. Sitting next to who? Eric Ciaramella. No joke. Sitting in a conference room in the embassy in the Ukraine with Eric Ciaramella, the supposed whistleblower of Mr. Shifty Schiff, who's also connected to, you know, obviously by marriage. You've got the neocon Robert Kagan, Victoria Nuland, Eric Ciaramella. It's very, very incestuous. And the same guy that wrote, and there it is, absolutely fantastic, that Eric Ciaramella right there. Thank you very much, guys. So how does this all come together? How do we connect these dots? Guess what? That man that you just heard that said that he admires Gene Sharp, and right in front of the Brookings Institute banner, right behind that, wrote the election Transition Integrity Project, published that on the internet. And ladies and gentlemen, let's go back around full circle. A source that had come to me at the very, very highest levels, who had been, of course, as a white hat trying to get out the information that the DOJ was investigating Norm Eisen for conducting a covert communications operation in Xbox gaming channels and other methods. Now, is this a conspiracy theory? No, it is not. In the, I think we have on the other side of this break, a couple of minutes, I will disclose to you just how important these covert communication methods are, because we discovered in Benghazi that the guys that were on the ground in Benghazi were in fact talking to CIA operators, talking in the gaming chat rooms. You know what? That's actually going to conclude this segment. This very special hour goes very, very quickly. We will continue to provide updates to you on our show. And, of course, I'm sure that Alex will be connecting the dots as we go in the coming days, weeks, and months. Thanks, everybody.
The Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. And boy, it just you know, exploded into just the problem. The Russians should not be there. They got suckered in, I think. And they should have never attacked a country. And it was unprovoked, but there was a lot of reasons. The biological deals there, they're possibly Nazi military units seeded into the Ukrainian army. And there's a lot of problems there. Coming up next is an interview by Elizabeth McDonald about the upcoming trial that's going to begin on Sussman. This was the attorney for Hillary that continues, that actually begins this coming Monday. Here's Elizabeth McDonald with that interview.
He's the guy to talk to break this down. He's Hans von Spakovsky. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. We love having him on. Okay, Hans, here's what's going on. Let's break it down for the viewer. We've got a blockbuster criminal trial starting on Monday in Hillary's Trump Russia. It's special counsel Durham. He's alleging Hillary campaign lawyer Michael Sussman lied to the FBI, covering up that he was working for the Hillary campaign. So the judge is ruling that Hillary's anti-Trump opposition research firm, that's Fusion GPS, they got to turn over to the Durham probe 22 emails. The Hillary team is trying to block this. Could this spill out a conspiracy charge for the Durham team?
Well, yeah, it's very interesting that these emails are going to get turned over to Durham. And, you know, why does the Clinton campaign not want them released? What's in them? Is it more evidence of their involvement in all of this? Look, we've already seen from emails and other things that the Durham investigation has put out that top officials, including the manager of the campaign, knew all about this hoax, this false claim of Trump Russia collusion, and in fact helped with the media campaign to get the media interested in reporting on this.
You know, so Judge Cooper, he's writing that the emails were not covered by attorney-client privilege, as the Sussman team was arguing, that this is part of Hillary's campaign media relations, pushing Trump Russia into the government, into the media. Now, they can't be used in the Sussman trial, but Special Counsel Durham now has it in his massive document trove that he now has on the trial. And the thing is, when he needs to prove criminal intent beyond a reasonable doubt, first of all, to seal this charge against lawyer Sussman of lying to the DOJ and the FBI.
Yeah, but I think he's going to be able to easily do that, because not only does he have witness testimony, witness testimony from the FBI, but remember, not too long ago, we discovered that he also had written communications from Sussman to the FBI saying, oh, you know, basically, I'm just a good citizen. That's why I'm giving you this. I'm not representing a client, when he clearly was representing the Clinton campaign and the DNC. In fact, his law firm was representing them, and his partner, Mark Elias, was the general counsel for the Clinton campaign.
Yeah, you know, and here's the other thing that's going on. Hillary's campaign, the lawyer's team, they're trying to block another witness. He's FBI agent David Martin. He's been debunking this computer research that the Clinton campaign was cooking up that supposedly revealed the secret back channel between the Trump organization and Russia's Alpha Bank, which the FBI debunked as just, you know, hotel marketing spam emails from the Trump team. But what's really surprising in this case, too, is that the Sussman side of the aisle, Hans, is saying they have 300 emails where indicating that the FBI knew Sussman was working for Hillary's campaign. So, you know, Hans, that sounds like it was pretty much an open secret that Hillary was driving the Trump-Russia probe behind the scenes at the FBI. I say that facetiously. What I'm saying is that the FBI knew it was coming from her team, and they went ahead with it anyway.
Yeah, that's the defense they're putting up for Sussman, that it didn't really matter what Sussman said to the FBI when he set up that meeting. The FBI knew that Sussman was representing the Clinton campaign. Look, if that is true, that makes the FBI look even worse than it already does, and its reputation has been damaged to the point I'm not sure it can be repaired, because what that means is the FBI engaged on a partisan law enforcement witch hunt, knowing that it was being fed this information by a political campaign.
It's astonishing. We're going to stay on the story. We'll have you back on, Hans.
Yeah.
It's good to see you.
In relationship to this Sussman trial, H.A. Goodman reporting on an article written today by a New York Post, appeared in New York Post today, is saying that Durham has enough evidence, they're saying in that article, to seek an indictment on Hillary. And there's, you know, you just listen to these 22 emails that are being bantered about and being talked about. So that's real danger to her. So anyway, we're going to finish out the program and the exit music will come on and we'll be gone. But this is H.A. Goodman reporting on his ideas about what's going on.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very important segment. I'm reading the New York Post today. One lie that hides an enormous conspiratorial event inside the trial that exposes Clinton's plot to slander Trump. Andrew McCarthy talks about how the Durham probe special counsel can utilize legal statutes like 18 U.S. Code 371 to indict Madam Secretary Hillary Clinton. Now, years back, when there was an email probe by the Federal Bureau of Investigation that was essentially a cover-up, where they found top-secret intelligence on servers running outside of the United States government. I wrote about this endlessly in The Hill, The Huffington Post, Salon, and other publications. I have books on Amazon, a couple that I wrote, but her top-secret emails, but her deleted emails, and debunking the Trump-Russia myth. They're on Amazon right now. They're e-books. And I explain that nobody knows how top secret and special access program intelligence, and I talked about this in The Hill, The Huffington Post, Salon, and these articles were shared hundreds of thousands of times. I talked about how we don't know how Clinton and her team managed to transfer or migrate or remove top secret intelligence from secure government locations onto servers running outside of the United States government. It's physically impossible. From a digital or cyber perspective, it is not possible to do so, but they found a way. Peter Strzok, Andrew McCabe, James Comey, all the people who were supposed to protect this country from serious harm, said, well, she didn't mean to do it. They obviously lied. But back then, when I was writing in The Hill, The Huffington Post, Salon, and the writing was shared hundreds of thousands of times, there were people, YouTube pundits, who have 1 million to 4 million sub-channels, one of which in particular, I'm not going to name the person, but he has like around 1 million subs. He disparaged me because I was, back then, before I became a supporter of President Trump, a Bernie Sanders supporter. I was the biggest Bernie Sanders booster on the internet, according to the Huffington Post, and the unofficial scribe of Sanders' most hardcore voters, according to the Washington Post. And I was saying, look, if the FBI is apolitical, they're going to indict Madam Secretary Hillary Clinton. She will get charged. One of the many reasons my prediction about Clinton losing to Trump was accurate, 100%. true, and I was unfortunate. Well, I was vindicated, fortunately, because Trump won, defeated Clinton. I said he would. One of the reasons I said he would is because a Comey letter that tanked her campaign was just a continuation of a cover-up. But anyway, this YouTube pundit and other people tried to disparage me. They were the vote blue no matter who crowd, pretending to be up against the system, being disingenuous and duplicitous and obviously working desperately to prop up a very corrupt system that cheated Bernie Sanders and covered up numerous crimes with Madam Secretary. Now, mind you, I want a Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump 2024. I think we need that as a country. Nobody will be happier than I will when and if Clinton, I believe she will run again eventually, becomes nominee of the Democratic Party. I'll be voting for Trump or DeSantis. Those people who tried to disparage me for telling the truth because they were they're basically born to worship and to be loyal and to work for the Democratic Party no matter what, those people will vote for Madam Secretary, and it'll be a beautiful sight to see. But anyway, hit subscribe to this channel. I will have a live stream in about an hour, people, so be here on this channel about 1 hour. Hit subscribe to the Stock Market Crash channel. I have a segment, very important segment up today, and I'll have a segment right before the live stream. I have a segment on the Twitter purchase that's postponed by Elon Musk. He's eventually going to buy the company, but like I said, Bitcoin crashed. I said it would crash. Cryptocurrencies are going to crash a lot more. Bitcoin's going to crash to $10,000. It's going to descend to $10,000 per coin. The market went up today. That's just, I mean, you have to be a fool to buy the dip. It's going to descend. The Dow's going to get way below 30,000. NASDAQ will get way below where it is now. S&P will continue to descend. Inflation will skyrocket, continue to either stay at the level it is or skyrocket more than expected. We have contracting GDP growth. We will have a recession. That's two consecutive quarters of GDP, negative GDP. We have a shortage of formula for mothers and babies, and it's like unbelievable. Like the entire society is collapsing, but it's all about Trump not tweeting, which eventually he will tweet, because eventually Elon Musk will purchase Twitter. But this is a fantastic article, and it talks about, according to the court filings, quote, Durham has found the Clinton campaign as the culprit. The problem is that Durham has not charged that fraudulent scheme, yet he wants to offer evidence of the sweeping scheme in order to prove a comparatively minor and narrow offense, namely that Sussman lied to the FBI in a single meeting on September 19, 2016. Then it goes on to talk about how Sussman's lie is part of a grandiose attempt, plot, people conspiring with one another to set up and frame Trump, which is exactly what I've been talking about. The center of all of this is the Clinton campaign, the DNC. Again, I want a Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump 2024. So you might say, you're all over the place. What are you talking about? You're saying that she committed crimes, but you still want her to run again? Yes, yes, and yes. We're stuck in 2016. We need to get 2016 every day. I'm like a relic. I'm like an AI. I'm like Max Hedren. Okay, an AI robot from 2016. Okay? We are stuck in 2016. And we need to come to terms with the fact we haven't, everything from the Supreme Court leak to the Durham Probe Special Counsel, had Bernie Sanders not been cheated, even though I'm a passionate supporter of DeSantis and Trump, Donald Trump, I'm telling you, at that point, Bernie Sanders would have defeated Trump, not the Bernie of today. Lightning in a bottle, Bernie Sanders 2016, that moment in time, which will never take place again, because we know now they're going to cheat Bernie and the far left and funnel left-leaning votes back into the Democratic Party through AOC and Bernie Sanders. This isn't rocket science. It's a complete overt racket, you can see.